last week. On the Lords of Grantham podcast, we were talking Belgravia, the next chapter, episode 6. On that episode, we had Ellerby confessing his feelings for Clara Dunn. She didn't really respond to him because the Duke and Duchess's son was having seizures, and that was bad news for everyone. Meanwhile, Frederick, he was looking to invest some more into the silver mine proposition that the Marquis kept putting forward, and Ross, the financier, account manager for Frederick, was investigating this, trying to understand more about who this Marquis character is. And so we'll get to that and more this week on the Lords of Grantham podcast. Go on, take the money and run.
We're back again at the tail end of Belgravia, the next chapter. What is going on, Corey?
Everything and nothing. How about you?
I mean, not really everything. Kind of in the middle. Enjoyed a beautiful weekend of spring-adjacent weather.
I was in Florida, so it was not actually beautiful weather down there. It was
too hot?
No, it was just gray and rainy.
Okay.
Not Florida weather.
It was in the 60s yesterday in Connecticut, Sunday.
I came back to that and I was just disgusted. I was like, no, this is too soon.
Too soon? Especially because Florida didn't deliver the goods. It's like New York shouldn't be delivering goods that Florida can't, climate-wise.
Yeah, and I know I live in New York, but it drives me up a wall. Like, everyone and their mothers comes out when the weather's good and then just makes these congested streets. And it's just like, why do I live here? What am I doing?
It was better than Florida.
I guess so, yeah.
Well, do we have any news on the fronts of our programs?
Well, Dave, you noticed something about Bridgerton.
I did.
If you drink coffee.
There's an international delight. 2 Bridgerton coffee creamers.
Okay. What kind of flavors?
So one of them is a toffee. So I just pulled it up now. We have English toffee and is one flavor. And then berry creamer.
Well, it sounds like you gotta try that, Dave.
I will do what I will do for this podcast. But okay. Berry coffee creamer sounds disgusting.
it sounds a bit strong.
I mean, the toffee one, like, I'm not much of a, I drink my coffee black. So the idea of committing to 32 ounces of Bridgerton coffee creamer that will inevitably sit in my fridge for like a year is something I'm not too thrilled about, but you know, we did the Downton Abbey tea.
I really don't like coffee at all. I don't.
Well, I mean, I guess people do put creamer. People put milk in tea. I don't know if you put creamer in tea, but I'll do the
Lord's. Can you drink the cream straight?
You could. I mean, it's kind of gross.
Okay.
I mean, I'll do the Lord's work. We won't dedicate an entire podcast to it, but maybe next week I'll have a cup of decaf when we record, and I will have some opinions if I can get it.
Because I can tolerate tea, I just can't tolerate coffee. I just don't. Not a fan.
Well, then you're a real Brit, which is another interesting thing that Bridgerton is doing, like coffee creamer.
Yeah.
But
aside from that, Dave, I don't think anything else is going on outside of Belgravia.
Still waiting to see what's going on with all these rumors and no new rumors from Highclere.
All the more reason that I find this to be a bunch of hot air. If there was actual smoke to this Downton Abbey return, there would be a succession of news appearances or, you know, people would be looking into this. It just seems so strange that they threw up that one signal a few weeks ago on Daily Mail and there's been nothing since. Get out of here.
Come on. I think it's time we start knocking on doors, like our, you know, to jump right into Bridgerton, like our guy going around Etagnac.
However you may say it. Now, this is absolutely the best episode of the season, far and away.
This is insane. I was jaw on the floor this episode.
There are so many reveals in this episode. All I could think about was how would have Julian handled this, and my thought process was he wouldn't have done this. All these reveals that they've been sitting on all season would not have just gone off all at once.
But do you,
like,
I was thinking as I was watching this episode, and I mean, we haven't even done any diving into the stories, but I recently had a conversation with someone about Game of Thrones and what's the point of Game of Thrones in when you know how badly it ends. Is it worth giving your hours, and for us who watched it in the moment, years, to a show that ends so poorly? And I said, I don't, and I told my friend who is one of my coworkers who's like, I think I'm going to watch Game of Thrones. I said, don't do it. It's not worth it. It ends so poorly. It's not worth your time. And I was watching this episode thinking, and a friend of ours asked us how Belgravia was relative to the rest of our shows. And we honestly said it was the lower tier quality wise.
Yeah.
This episode made me rethink, if you watch this and then rewatched everything, it makes everything better to me. I mean, I don't think I will rewatch everything, but it justifies a lot of it.
It's kind of the conundrum of, like, if you, you know, give or take a few, but if you like the Fast and Furious movies and you tell people, just get in them with Fast Five, start there.
Mm-hmm.
And then people are like, well, I got to watch the rest of it. And it's like, you don't have to. And that's where the problem here is, like, just watch this episode of Belgravia. Do I have to watch the other episodes? I guess.
You got to watch the bathhouse episode.
It's a long 6 hours to get here, Dave. That's the thing I go back to. Like, if you're binging this, there's a chance you stop binging at a certain point because it just took too long to get to this. This would have been a fantastic 6-episode season. Instead, we got an 8-episode season.
And I guess we can begin our dive into this. But it does seem as though these are sort of a series of reveals that could be divvied up throughout the season.
Because some of them are just low-hanging fruit, and we could start with that.
Yeah.
Nell. Sorry to bark her name out there, but, like, lowest hanging of fruit. She's a character that we just bump into.
Uh-huh.
We don't know her backstory. It's very troubling, you know, over the course of the season. Find out she had a child, couldn't afford to be the mother and everything, and now she's working for the Dunns. And this week, we get some more time with her. We see that, you know, James is still ailing from his injuries, and she's willing to help him tend to that. And we get a nice little sweet moment where he feels so worthless because he's sinned and, you know, he's not pure as God would like him. And she reminds him, like, no, you really did save me. You gave me hope to keep going. So, you know, thank you for that. And I think that really does connect with James a little bit, to kind of have some hope that he can do good in this world.
Yeah, he starts eating again after this.
Yeah, pea soups and stuff like that. It looks like he's just imbibing soup. From there, though, she's at home doing her job, and she sees a note to Mrs. Dunn.
Mm-hmm.
And Miss Dunn's like, oh, don't worry about this. This is just another note from the Duchess about something. But there's a name on there that catches her eye. And I didn't piece it together in the moment. Did you, Dave?
I did before Clara gets there.
Really?
I was like, oh no, because I didn't even know this girl could read.
Right. Well, it was unclear if she could read or not.
Mm-hmm.
But lo and behold, Ellerby was the deadbeat dad of her child.
And what a punch to the face. Like, they really doubled down on him. This episode has a real problem with how it's treating Ellerby, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we could talk while we're talking, because it's another somewhat small plot. So this happens, and so Nell finally has found the father to her deceased child, which is great for her. Not great because he seems to be, like, coddling her. You know, like, he seems to be that kind of playboy who he ditched her to move on to greener pastures. Yeah. And as soon as she's back, he's like, oh, honey, I've always been here for you. Probably
I don't know. We don't see it at all. She just has her hand firmly planted on his chest, and his arm is wrapped around her.
Uh-huh.
So we don't know exactly what transpired in that moment there, although it definitely seemed like she coveted him.
Well, I mean, something went down. We know that's for sure. But
So we see at some point in time.
This happens, and all this other stuff is going on with Ellerby, and we'll get to that with the Clara of it all. But we see him having a conversation with the Duchess of Rochester, where she's like, we're sending the boy away for the rest of his life. And he's like, have you considered... Have you considered maybe this family, Dr. Carey and his wife, or a childless family, who have the emotional wherewithal to potentially raise Peter and help him be the best version of himself? And the Duchess is like, the Duke is set. This is not changing.
Yeah.
And in that moment, you're supposed to be like, well, Ellerby is a reasonable professional man. You don't think he's a quack, but it's just like, when he clocks out, he's a deviant. Like, it's such a difficult line for me to respect his professional opinion and then hate him personally.
It makes me wonder, too, like, when did they develop the Nell character? Because she is so tertiary to everything going on in the show. And it just feels like a late add because she doesn't really impact the plot in any meaningful way, aside from, I guess, helping James out, although you could have just had Clara do the same. It's like as if they've thought the audience won't believe Ellerby to be that bad of a person unless we have this kind of person here to show that, oh yeah, he did this to someone, you know. And we did hear offhand how he is like a womanizer, but like there's no evidence until this, and so it does make it easy to be like, you know what, it's for the best that Clara doesn't run away with this guy. He's a dirtbag.
Oh yeah, well, I don't think Clara ever had any intentions of running away with him.
No, but no. I mean, we should cover that too. He made his peace. He spoke out this episode, like after meeting with the Duchess, and she's like, "No, you're out of a job, and we're not letting Peter go stay with the family." He's hanging out with Clara again. And he's like, "I love you. I love you so much. I love you so much." And she is saying,
"No,
bro, I'm married. Look at my hand. This is a ring."
She goes, "My heart belongs to Frederick, even if he's a jerk."
Yeah. Not entirely clear where that came from, because it definitely seems like, to me at least, she definitely seems on the outs with Frederick until Ellerby puts these moves on and she has to say, no, I do love him. And it's like, you have a funny way of showing it.
Well, considering you've done nothing to reciprocate. She's aware that she's capable of loving him. And obviously we see how the episode goes. Like, it's not peachy, you know, but
yeah,
she's not a cheater. Like, she knows she might be breaking the, or like putting her toe on the line, but she's never crossing the line. And Ellerby's like, cross the line, baby. Come to the dark side. And she's like, no, I like hanging out with the Bohemians, but I don't want to, you know, lay with the Bohemians.
And that's pretty much the Ellerby of it all. I mean, he bumps into Clara at the end, and we'll investigate why later. But she's like, oh man, you had me. God, you're a piece of dirt. I actually thought you were a good guy. And he's like, no, I didn't know that I had a baby. I swear I didn't know I had a baby. And I swear I pulled out.
I tried.
She's like, you didn't. You didn't do it.
The little swimmer got through, my friend.
Yeah. And now Ellerby is settling for the consolation prize that is Nell, maybe? I don't know.
I hope not. I hope he ends up in dirt. I can't see that being a thing long term.
We'll have to find out, man.
Yeah. I mean, we got one more after this, one more tale. And, I mean, that's so, really that.
With Ellerby and Nell.
With Nell.
You mentioned James, but we do get more of Emily caring for James this episode, feeding him, making sure he's okay. And she's like, I'm all about you, brother. And he's like, you're a good friend.
You're a great friend.
Yeah. Leave it at that.
And we have a...
and she's violently like smiling and nodding her head. And it's like, no, it's not what you think. He's not into you like that.
Yeah, well, I guess
he's just not that into you.
We can talk about Emily, the Emily of it all. So we see that the Duchess goes to visit Emily and Mrs. Dunn and says, like, look, I don't want to start trouble. And this is following a sort of tea session of tea spilling with the Duchess, the Marquise, and some other woman. I don't know her name.
Woman inserted to help fill out the room.
Belgravia resident, where they're talking about how Clara has been was with Dr. Ellerby. This new woman is like, she was in the park with Dr. Ellerby, and the Duchess is like, hey, he's a physician. She had some anxiety. It's all good. And then the Marquise is like, oh no, she was screwing that guy. She's like, he's...
Not that she knows for sure.
No, but... And she said, I told her she was flying too close to the sun. She didn't listen to me.
Yeah.
So she's talking out of, you know, both ends, the Marquise. So the Duchess goes to the Duns and says, hey, there's some stories out there about your daughter. And they're not true, but I want you to know because I don't want you to hear from other people and, you know, damage control. So Emily, she goes over to talk to her sister and she's like, you ruined it. You screwed it all up. And, you know, you said that Emily last week was huge needle mover. I think she's a huge needle mover this week. Where she's like, you ruined my chances with James by doing this. I told you you were being crazy and you didn't listen. And I hate you.
More or less. Yeah. I mean, also James is like twice, 10 times the man.
100 times the man Frederick is. She says that to Clara's face.
Yeah. She's laying into her. Because, like, Clara goes to give her a hug after she shows up. And she's like, no. You get away from me, you...
You hussy?
Wench. Yeah, you hussy.
Doesn't she call her a bitch, too?
Oh, something... Yeah. Yeah, I think so. That's her sister. I mean, she can call her what she wants, I guess. Good for Emily. Because Clara... Really, she's kind of annoying me at this point in the season. Like, like I said, like when she says to Ellerby, I love Frederick, it's like, do you? And then like she's willingly throwing herself around with this guy. It's like, take a step back and look at what you're doing. Because as bad as Frederick is, you're not helping the situation either.
Yeah, I think for people that are familiar with Poldark, I've made a lot of comparisons of her to Demelza Poldark, where...
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people in this show, Queen Charlotte is another example, where you know, you pluck this sort of average person from their life and put them in high society and they just screw it up. But Clara seems especially proud and also dumb. Like she's
naive.
Yes.
She's naive.
So that exactly.
So glad that Clara is getting some notice or head checks from her sister. Emily.
I mean, finally. But so Clara is talking to Davison a little later. And Davison is like, yeah, I have it on good authority that the Reverend is not capable of loving a woman.
Yeah.
And then Clara tries to tell Emily this. And this is like the same conversation between that Emily, or rather that Frederick and James had last week, where it's like, our dad is not the same. Our dad is not, my dad's not your dad. And he's like, you're just trying to screw up my life. And so Clara's like, don't put all your eggs in that basket because he is incapable of loving you. And she's like, you shut up.
Yeah. You don't know anything. They're at odds. Is that all with Emily? Or are we missing anything?
I think that's pretty much it with Emily. She's so beyond thrilled that and I think that between Nell and Emily, there's enough like juice that they really do help James get back on his, not on his feet, but he's not dying at the end of the episode.
Yeah, he's not willing himself to die from lack of eating or anything. You know, one thing about that Duchess this episode, by the way, because she, you know, she's talking to the Duns about Clara's ways. She also, what is it? She's talking to the Marquise too about Clara. The Duchess talks to everyone but Clara.
Uh huh.
Like, really, you're doing a great job helping this situation, Duchess. By you know,
yeah, by continuing not talking spreading to the rumors. Source of the problem.
Yeah, just say like, hey, what's gotten into you? Instead of saying, man, there's something up with that woman. Y'all should check it out. great job, Duchess. Unless she wants Frederick to split from her.
She might.
Could be. It doesn't seem like the Duke is much bothered this episode. We don't even see him comment on Peter. It's all business with him and Frederick.
Yeah, and we'll get there when we get there. We can talk about
trash.
We can talk about Robert.
Oh, I was about to say the lowest of the lowest hanging fruit.
Well, I don't. Is he this week though? He starts the move. He starts a needle move.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. He starts the rumble, but. So all these weeks of him handing off bottles of sherry and wine, it's not any big reveal of whoever he's handing it off to. He's just doing it.
He's breaking the rules. And we see Mrs. Enright catches him, and she's like, put in your notice and get out of here, and I won't bring this up again. And he's like, oh, okay, but what if I got some dirt for you?
Do you find that to be a little bit of a letdown, though, that it's just like kind of nobody that he's handing off the bottles of wine to? They've been throwing this breadcrumb at us for at least 3 or 4 weeks that he's doing this. And it's just like, oh, okay, it was just a thing he was doing.
Uh-huh.
There's no big reveal of who he was doing it for or anything. I mean, it doesn't have to add up to anything, but it just seems strange.
Seems like a waste of thread time. Something.
They literally could have done that all in this week without having to thread it for weeks.
Or once.
Yeah.
Or maybe next week we find out like he's got like $1,000 in the bank from selling all this liquor and he's going to take Maud out or something. Like there could be, yeah. I don't think there will be. But there could
be.
So he reveals to Mrs. Enright, your husband, he's writing letters to a long lost lover.
Well, he doesn't say lover. He's writing the letters to someone.
And then...
And,
you see, through Maud, he's paying off Maud. Maud's bringing him. And then we see Mrs. Enright intercept the letter as it's getting sent.
Immediately. She's, like, just in the room next door as he's doing this exchange, Mr. Enright and Maud. You'd think he'd be a little bit more discreet.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, she intercepts the letter. And then so yeah, Robert doesn't get fired, by the way, because he gave this information.
Good on him. Easy way to keep your job.
Absolutely.
And
so
we want to just continue with this.
Well, she has this information, yeah, and she has her daily exchange with Ross.
Uh huh.
And she lets him know about what this news she got. And we'll get into the Ross of it all, but he's like, oh, that's good information.
Don't do nothing with it for a day.
Yeah. And he's planning to leave town, and she says, you're going to go with me, right? Oh, yeah.
He's like, oh, yeah. Am I?
Do I, though? And he says, okay, just give me the note, and then I'll be here tomorrow at noon. And they even cut to his hand, give him the, give it.
Ross with a lot of screen time this week.
Oh, yeah. And so poor Miss Enright, though, buys into this, though, that, you know, she'll be able to run away with this guy who's been charming her this entire time.
Mm-hmm.
And the next day, Mr. Ross, he, I don't even know if it's Mr. Ross, it's just Ross, he's just ain't around. He's missing. And she immediately clocks, oh, he used me. Well.
Well, do you think he used her, or do you think Clara and Davison screwed up his plans?
I mean, that depends on what his plans were. I'm not even sure.
Well, he said he was going to pick her up at the house.
At noon.
And then Clara and Davison decided to jump in the carriage.
I just feel like based on how they established him as being untrustworthy now, I don't believe he would have done it.
I'm curious where things wind up for him, and we'll you know, we can talk more about him even right now, but I don't think it was, you know, he's a guy, clearly we see he's not very good with women. If there's a woman that gives him attention, I'm sure he would have taken it all the way to whatever crummy inn they were staying at. You know, I don't think he's a very, I think he's a very boorish man. He's focused on money and women.
Yeah. But I think this exchange is definitely a good payoff of all those little breadcrumbs of Ross and Enright throughout the season. Like, okay, so she has actual meaningful information to pass along. And he's got it. And so that influences that plot line. Poor Miss Enright, though.
Yeah, yeah. No, I guess should we circle back? Because all these things kind of come to a head at the end of the episode.
Well, we can just leave off the... Let's just finish the downstairs, which is that Frederick eventually finds out about this letter that Mr. Enright's been sending, and immediately sacks him. Fires him right there.
Well, he is under the assumption that Enright has been a spy put in by the Marquise to suss him out as a mark. And she's been writing, you know, because of France. And then we see in some superb acting by the downstairs people, Mrs. Enright has so much fury in her voice because she's been left behind by Ross, and now her husband has been made a fool of and fired. And then we see Mr. Enright is bawling. And
he's a crier.
Gerard Horan, the guy who plays him, phenomenal. Like, you see all of the weight of, because we know who he's writing to. We know it's not the Marquise, but we know that the Enright, if he's going to have to explain, he's going to have to explain that Balassus soon come.
We hope, fingers crossed, that it is John Balassus he's been writing. But yeah, poor Mr. Enright, blubbering a mess, tried to do right by him. And such a hard moment for Frederick, because everyone's turning on him in that moment.
Oh, man, this end of the whole... This is a wonderful way to set up for a triumphant finale, because this poor guy just gets dumped upon the whole week, whole episode.
So where do we want to start with the big entanglement of all this here?
I think we should talk about Ross, what he's up to. So he's got his buddy from the bridge last week, goes off to Etagnac in France. And he comes back with a report.
They don't even have to spend that much budget. It's like literally like a field and a road, and then a little sign that says Etagnac. And it's like, okay, yeah, he's in France.
So he comes back, and he tells Ross that the Marquise, her real name was Mathilde something. I didn't write down her last name.
Balmadier.
And she was poor. And she married into her title. And there was no money involved with the title, but she started borrowing.
Well, she was one of eight children. Yes. So she was, you know, kind of desperate. And so she sought out a man in a rundown house who was a descendant of the Montique, of the Tignac. And yeah, seduced him and married him, even though he was penniless, because she wanted that title.
So she starts borrowing against the banks and stuff like that, and we see that it's
that's the thing that gives me the biggest pause in the story that they tell here is, like, if this guy's as disgraced as they suggest, wouldn't that also be like associated with his name by proxy, and thus the bank maybe less in interested in giving money to someone of that name? You'd think if he's that much on hard times.
Well, we don't know exactly how he fell on hard times either. And
he's penniless.
I guess the thing that I picked up from the Marquise's story is that she's always been very cunning, so she probably knew who to play. And it seems as though the story is that she goes from one place to the other, taking people's money to pay off the last debt and moving on to the next place.
And it pretty much tracks with, what we assumed. She's a shyster. And they were replaying the whole plot line from the Gilded Age, unfortunately, that Oscar Van Ryan had gone through with Maud Beaton.
Uh-huh.
Except with the Marquise. And she has a mark. It's Frederick.
What seems as though she has a lot of marks. More than just Frederick.
Right, because she built up this resume in France that she had to escape town.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, once she got here, she's been playing the fiddle of some people. Yeah, I guess she did play the Duke's fiddle too. So.
Yeah, so we see our boy Ross has this information, and he has two choices. One is be a good guy, tell your business partner she's a con artist, or go to the source and try to
mm-hmm.
make a little of your own.
And mind you, we also got the key piece of information that of the court cases against her, twice over, the people who were filing those claims committed suicide, allegedly. Uh-huh. Allegedly.
Oh, yeah, lots of...
Heavy,
she's wanted. She's a wanted woman.
Yeah, heavy quotes on allegedly committed suicide.
Yeah, so Ross goes to visit.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, look, I'm not going to snitch on you, but Frederick is making a huge investment. Give me half cash, and we'll be good to go. And she goes, okay.
It's a funny scene, though, because the servant that's next to him all of a sudden starts speaking English. Like, what are you doing? And he's like, wait, you can only speak French as far as I can remember last uh-huh. week. Like, the facade immediately crumples down.
And the whole like, house starts coming out, and they're like, what are we going to do, Marquise? We need to get out of here.
Right. You even see the guy who was playing the actor from a few weeks ago of wanting to get into the silver mine.
Uh-huh.
He's a part of the whole thing. But Ross is pleased as punch because he's like, I snookered her, you know? I'm going to get my cut. And it's like, dude, did you not hear that part of the story about the two people allegedly committing suicide in court?
Yeah.
You think you're actually going to get away with this, dummy?
No, apparently.
I couldn't believe how dumb he was. Because he seemed kind of logical. He was the one even warning Frederick about this investment weeks ago. Like, he's that dumb to just try and play his hand here? Okay, all right.
Uh-huh. So so
the Marquise is saying, we can give him 30 pieces of silver and he'll be fine. But then it's like, wait, no, we have to kill him. And her helper's like, yeah, I think we got to kill
he's
him.
He's like, that seems like a wonderful idea.
I'd love to do it.
So he gets the money the next week and he's happy as a clam with, you know, a sack full of cash.
Well, it's not just the cash. He takes all of Frederick's money
uh-huh.
from that safe. So he's not even going to actually split it with the Marquise. He's just taking it for himself at that point.
No, but he does go to the Marquise's place. And mm-hmm. then, so I think he has Frederick's checks as well for the Marquise.
Yeah.
Then gets his cash back and has also looted the safe.
Yeah.
So then he goes to leave with his top hat that's like 7.5 feet tall.
Oh my lord, I kept waiting for something, because they have this chase scene now, where he leaves with that 7.5 foot tall hat, and her French servant is chasing him down.
With an equally tall hat.
No, I don't know equally, but it's tall. It's a well put together chase scene, but it is kind of clumsy how he's just hiding behind a bush as he's walking through the park.
You just see like the top of a top hat coming over the bush.
Well, that's a missed opportunity. They literally should have done that when he was hiding behind like certain things, just to have the top of the top hat popping out and him be like, that's where he is. That's where Ross is.
Nope.
And, yeah. So yeah, he goes to the foundry's office and that's where he loots a little bit more, leaves a note for Lord Trenchard. And
the note we already discussed.
Yep. And was it Claire bumps in there at a certain point?
Yeah, so this is, we got to talk about Frederick.
Yeah.
So Frederick, I mean, I think we can circle back even to talk about Frederick and Clara.
Mm-hmm.
That basically, there's more like just sort of interstitial stuff between them. She finds out about James from her sister. And Frederick, and they have a conversation, and he's like, look, leave me alone. I want to see him already. None of your business. Move on.
Mm-hmm.
And all this stuff continues. And then the Duchess tells Frederick all the same information about Clara, and then Frederick blows up on her and says,
"Yeah,
no going to that house, no hanging around with those beatnik losers, those wannabes."
Mm-hmm.
And you and I will remain married, but we'll be, it will be just a title only. I want nothing to do with you. So this is when she says to Davison, "Pack up, we're leaving."
Or in the same breath, "I'd rather die than be around here." She'd rather be dead.
She repeats it. She said, "I would rather die."
Yeah.
So
her form of crying also is like cocking up one eyebrow and open eyes, tears coming down.
I mean, in fairness, the blow up scene is very good because I think start to see who's Frederick? Why does IMDb not have him right away? Benjamin Wainwright.
You start to see him show emotion.
He's really good in this scene. Like, this is one of the we've complained about him.
Yeah, I would believe that this is how they probably chose them as the actors, this scene, the way they're really going for it. Because, yeah, he's crying. And the key thing she says to him is like, you know, I loved you, but you never trust me. You said it yourself. You always were waiting for me to do something wrong. You brought this on yourself. And so she's really trying to make the case like, hey, man, I was here for you. Where were you?
But in fairness, it doesn't. I mean, I think obviously Frederick is going, crossing the line, assuming that she did have an affair with Dr. Ellerby. But everything she did is very wrong for a person in her spot in society. And
for real.
She takes no owner. She's not like, hey, yeah, it was pretty terrible that I went unaccompanied on multiple walks with this guy in public. Hey, it's pretty rough that I went to this guy's house or this, you know, bohemian artist's collective house without Davison. She doesn't do that at all. She's just like, no, trust me. And he's like, well, he can't trust you because you've already broken his, you've already operated behind his back and behind your position.
Yeah.
So she says, Davison, I'm leaving. And Davison says, where you go, I go. And then Davison, a few minutes later, is like,
Davison to assume that Clara has the money to pay for her if she were to, you know, keep working for her.
Well, that's why that moment, like 2 seconds later, where she's like, I only have like 30 cents. And then they say, let's go see Ross. He'll understand.
Yeah. By the way, we get the one Fledger cameo this episode where Davison says, can you fetch a cab for us? You know, be good at this. And him rocking a bruise from last week says, yeah, I can do that.
Well, he did see you guys next week. He helped off screen by letting Davison know that the Reverend is not interested in Emily.
Yeah.
I thought he was going to join the caravan of bad boys.
Of traveling marauders.
So they say, we need money. Let's go to Ross. Mm-hmm. Ross is trustworthy. Even though, as of last week, Ross did not know... Emily did not know who Ross was. Or Clara did not know who Ross was, sorry.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, so they go there, and they make the case of, like, we need to get out of town. Can you help me? And he's like, well, I'm actually going to, to attend to some business. You can travel with me.
He goes, you go as far as you want.
Yeah. And so they have a plan. But before they leave, that's when Clara says, I need to go visit Ellerby. It's only the right thing to do.
Just to say goodbye. Close it off. Davidson's like, stop. No, who cares?
It only just occurred to me, too, that Clara just kind of barges in there. and she doesn't even really knock. Just walks right in. Yeah. Imagine if his pants were down.
That would have been better.
Yeah. Would have been something. But she goes in there and then she starts bawling and then she's like, oh, man, everything sucks.
Yeah.
So they're going off with Ross and they're in that little carriage and Ross is eyeing her up.
Uh-huh.
And let's not forget that earlier this episode, there's been nothing to suggest that Ross is like kind of a violent or like, horrible man like this. But we did see him looking at the portrait of Clara.
And touching the portrait. Like caressing it. That's what I
mean. And the Marquis, he was into it. And so now he's got the actual,
The living embodiment.
The beauty of the centerfold right in front of him.
Aphrodite.
Yeah. And so he's getting humana humana. He's eyeing her up left and right.
He's also clutching his bag, too.
Yeah, oh yeah, because he's got all that cash and notes in there. So they're going to stay at the hotel, and he's giving her a good night. And he's like, why don't I give you, just say proper good night. Let me come over there. Hey there. Can I kiss your hand? Man, you smell great. Let me kiss your hand. He kisses it, and he's like, that's the softest hand I ever did kiss. Give me some more of that. She is saying,
he has no game as far as
none
committing assault.
No, I mean, nor should you have game, but he is.
He's terrible at, like, we don't condone this, and I don't think this is something that needs to be well written, but, like, the door is wide open. They're in an inn.
Yeah, he's not very smart.
No, it's good for the story because Davison can get in quickly.
But it seems to me that they're also kind of selling that he's kind of he's just overwhelmed by her. You know, he can't control himself around here, really. Because it really does seem a little bit out of step with the Ross that we've seen this year, but we don't really even know Ross. So
yeah, I guess it's fine. You just know that he's kind of skeeved. But he's always been discreet with Mrs. Enright.
Yeah.
He's not, like, in front of everybody, like, hey, I'm banging this lady.
Well, that's the other thing about Ross this episode, too, is, like, he had Frederick's best interest in mind, at least when it came to his investments and stuff.
Uh-huh.
So, like, this whole episode feels like, well, how do we get rid of Ross with all the information that he knows? it seems a little bit out of character. But either way, Davison walks in with a candlestick to the bedroom. And she's like, get your hands off her. And he says, you can't do anything. And she says, I got a candlestick.
The F I can.
Yeah.
Bang.
Hits him. He drops like a sack of potatoes to the ground. And she says to... Well, Clara is like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do with this body? And Davison's, I've done this before. Let's get out of here.
Let's go.
Don't even think about it. And so they're out in the wind, but Ross isn't fully gone yet. He's not dead yet.
And we they say there's a carriage loading up outside. And as this is going on, we see several emphatic shots of suitcases being put on top of the carriage. So... I think we're led to believe that they make off with his suitcase.
Seems like it.
And as
he goes outside, though,
he's met by the top hat.
Yeah, and he kind of just he brings out a small blade, and Ross just kind of sighs to himself, like, "Well, I did this to myself.
That's how it's gonna be today. That's on Happy Tuesday.
That's on me. That one's on me. That's do what my, you gotta that's my do. Here. That's my bad."
Oh, yeah, I made it this far.
And that's probably the end of Ross. I can't imagine he survived that.
He didn't die on screen, so I'm gonna need confirmation. I'm gonna need confirmation next week that he is dead.
Yeah. Now the last loose end to tie up is just that Ross, he goes to the foundry, I think, after hearing about Clara from the Duchess. The Duchess tells him. That, you know, your wife has been walking around.
Frederick.
And, yeah, it's Frederick. That's what I meant to say.
Uh-huh.
And that, yeah, she's been seen around town with other people. Don't know how to tell you that, Frederick. And Frederick's just disillusioned, like, oh, my God.
The whole episode, he's just in a haze. Like, everything keeps falling apart.
Yeah. And, but did he confront Claire about that? I can't remember. Am I getting confused?
About what?
Did he confront Clara about that at the same time? Right, that's when he confronts Clara, but then he's kind of like wandering around afterwards.
Uh-huh.
And then, yeah, he goes to the foundry, finds the open safe, finds the note on the table that Ross left behind, and starts shaking uncontrollably because he finds out everything is a fraud. He goes to the Duke and says, that Marquise character,
He goes to the Narcisse's house first.
Right.
And finds it empty, straight out of the Gilded Age. Well, it's not empty. It's not like gutted. There's still paintings, and he sees the painting of his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like,
he doesn't think much of it.
Yeah, he's like, oh, my whole fortune is gone. But and then he goes to see the Duke, and that's when he's like, the Marquise is a clown and a shyster. And the Duke's like, oh, yeah, I heard about that. I didn't see him.
Good thing we didn't invest all that money in the silver mine, huh?
He goes, you win some, you lose some.
Frederick's like,
and Frederick, yeah. Duke is reading his book. He's like, oops, maybe next time I'll catch it. He goes, what? I really shouldn't have touted her around town like that. That was kind of a bad move on my part. My bad. I'm sorry.
And did I tell you that I'm sending my son away for life and I never have to see him again?
Yeah. By the way, this book I'm reading is pretty good. You read this one? Oliver Twist?
Yeah. Frederick just can't control himself. And that's when he goes back and, confronts Enright after that? And Enright's like, I don't know, man. I'm just writing letters.
I think that
Frederick's a mess.
That really, everything is falling apart. We also see a flashback. Another flashback.
Oh, yeah.
The first new flashback.
Early in this episode.
Hmm? Yeah, early in the episode.
Or you mean, yeah.
So we see that young child Frederick watching Susan canoodling with some man with a dark beard.
I thought that was his dad with, Eve up against the wall, Alice Eve up against the wall.
That didn't look like him.
Okay. I need a clearer shot.
Because it didn't have, but Oliver didn't have a full dark beard.
Yeah. And I don't know. He could have grown one.
He could have, but that also adds fuel to the fire that maybe Oliver never was capable of having children and that maybe
That's
Susan
true.
Got pregnant another way and just timed it up.
But no, that doesn't make sense because he loved James. Remember, he could see James.
Yeah, but if she learned how to play the game from her failures, she just got to lay with Oliver if she's laying with this other man, and it'll time up.
Yeah.
Or do what Poldark did.
We'll find it.
Poldark did it. They made it through.
Yeah. Well, we'll find out next week for sure.
And we also see one more flashback where old Frederick is at the deathbed of Oliver, and he's just begging for James.
Yeah.
And we see this is sort of Frederick thinking about how miserable he is in life.
Mm-hmm.
And then also putting pieces together that maybe his mom was not that innocent.
Nope.
So that is the episode. And like you said, this is, I think, far and away the best episode of the show so far.
We've been waiting for weeks for stuff to happen, and now all kinds of stuff has happened. And they did have one line about, the Marquise was shopping for a Duke. And so it starts to come together why she was kind of driving the wedge between Clara and Frederick, maybe.
Uh-huh.
You know, she was trying to maybe get in with Frederick or something. Potentially. I don't know. It just makes it all the more clear that she was just trying to divide these houses and get their money.
Yeah, and then get out of there.
I was hoping that the reveal would be that she's also not French, but that's one Julianism too many if they were to do that.
Well, yeah, he does the reverse where not only are they French, but they can speak English. That's a ism that we don't see that often.
Just, incredible lack of research there by Fred into what he was investing into.
Especially considering how eager Ross was to do it. Like, when he still had Ross on his side, he should have just pulled the trigger.
It seems to me, though, he won't go broke. He'll get his money back somehow because the Marquise did not at least get her hands on it.
Yeah, she didn't get her hands on all of it. And we see that in the narrative world, Davison and Clara have everything that Ross have, which is the contents of the safe and half of Frederick's money.
Yeah. So, great episode. I feel like we may have missed stuff because there was just so much happening in this
one. Yeah. It was kind of just like constantly beating on you. Like, this was a very down episode.
Yeah, a lot of down characters for the power rankings. A lot of options to work with. So, Dave, why don't we get to it? Who's going down at number three?
Number three, I got Clara because she just loses control. Like, and she acts... she doesn't take ownership of what's going on. And I know, obviously, I think Frederick has been emotionally bad to her. I don't want to say manipulative. He's been very negligent of her. But he has this... He kind of hollers at her. And she's still trying to clean up the Ellerby mess. but not doing so that well, because she's talking to him one-on-one when he's like, I love you. And she's like, stop.
Yeah.
But then the whole thing with Frederick happens. And she had, you don't have to say goodbye to Ellerby. Bad luck. You don't need to go there again. And then everything that happens with the running away and the attempted assault.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a rough, it's not the worst, but there's no way this is a good week for her.
Absolutely not. But number three, I got Enright. This is finally the payoff for all his weeks of sending out all these letters, getting sacked right there and crying in front of his entire staff. What a loser. Mr. Enright, you're going down at number three.
I think...
was it worth it?
That was a really terrible moment, but there's so much bad stuff happening this episode.
Yeah. Well, who's number two?
Number two is Ross.
Okay.
He's, you know, he betrays the trust of his business partner, mm-hmm. makes a deal with someone that is on the books as killing people that have interfered with their work. Then he goes to do this, you know, like he's already skeevy and a little evil. Full tilt, tries to sexually assault Clara.
Mm-hmm.
And then
it's bad.
Either he's getting killed or next week he's going to be made a fool of. I think the only way out for Ross is if he tells this attacker, I have more money than you thought I did. But he might
after
be
being
he also might
the head
just be
by a candlestick.
Yeah, he just might be dead. I think that's highly likely he's dead.
Okay.
What about you?
Well, number two going down, Clara, for all the reasons you laboriously went over. She's crying up a storm this episode with an arched eyebrow. She made all the wrong choices in hanging out with Ellery. She realizes that now. She's on the run from who knows what. She would rather die. Tough times to be Clara.
And her sister put her in her place again.
Yeah, she got smacked down. Love to see it.
The number one going down is Frederick.
Oh, the number one sad boy in the country. Oh my lord.
His world is burning. He's emotionally conflicted about his father. Yeah, his wife is gone. His money is gone.
His
business
financier
partner
left him.
Yep. Yep. And
the Marquise has left him.
Yep.
The Duke left him hung out to dry.
Yeah, the Duke doesn't care.
Mr. Enright's left him.
His
brother James is trying to leave
figure,
him.
His father figure, who he actually liked, has been screwing. Yeah, and his brother is basically thrown.
He's
this.
All alone.
Yo, he's got nothing.
He's a poor, poor, sad boy.
Yeah. Well, who do you have on? I mean, this is not a very positive episode, but who do you have on the positive side of things?
Well, Nell at number three. She finally figured out where that baby daddy was, and it looked like he let her cuddle up to him a little bit. So good for her after all this suffering to be like, where is the daddy? Where is he? And she found him.
She found him. Well, number three, I got the Marquise. Because...
why? She didn't get the money from Frederick.
But she gets out of Dodge as of right now. The thing is, I had a tough time finding three positive characters this week. And I was racking my brain for who wound up positive. And I think she gets figured out and immediately is like, no, let's just kill the guy.
Yep.
And as of right now, it seems like things are going pretty smoothly.
Okay. Well, number two, I got Emily. Mm-hmm. She's the one who lays into her sister, tells her what's up, is there caring for James, rehabilitating him. It's good. She's doing the Lord's work. Someone needs to tell Clara to wake up.
Yeah.
Call her a bitch.
Well, I got Nell at number two. Because everything that you said about figuring out who the baby daddy is, and also, you're just talking about the Reverend, it's not Emily that has the speech that gets the Reverend to start eating again. It's Nell.
Mm-hmm.
Nell has the moment where she's like, I'm alive. Like, you're not a sinner. I've done way worse than you. And the Reverend's like, hey, now let's not make judgments like that.
I'm not ruling out shipping them two together.
I think there's an outside chance. Nell and the Reverend make a lot more sense because I think Nell is willing to be a beard and also like swear off men after.
Yeah.
So yeah.
After all this. And it would pay off the whole Emily pining for this guy who wants nothing to do with her.
Uh-huh.
Also, we didn't talk about Mother Donna in this episode a lot, but she is very vocal in talking about, like, hey, Clara has backbone, okay? If something's going wrong in a marriage, it's Frederick. And it's like, she's onto something there.
Yep. Well, I mean, she is right. Going to the Bohemians.
Yep. But number one going up, I know it's the power rankings, but it's who moved and shaked things the most this week? It's Ross. Undeniably. He did the... Are you kidding me? This guy...
Okay. He's evil.
Turned over the whole show on its head. Doesn't matter if he's evil. He flew a little too close to the sun is his biggest problem. This is the guy who took all the money from Frederick, prevented the Marquise from getting the money that she wanted. He may be gone, but doesn't matter. The Marquise doesn't have the money.
But she still has a lot of the money.
Not all of it, because Ross stopped that. And so he got over, went over on Miss Enright with the information. He really did ruin a lot of people this week. And I even guess if he ruined himself.
If you cut the episode off at like the 47-minute mark, you'd be like, Ross isn't that bad. He's a little bit selfish.
Got a smooch on the hand by being a terrible person. He's moving up until he's moving down, but he moved up
moving
a lot more than others
down,
this week, even if he did.
Potentially.
It's like, literally, he scored 20 points and then lost the game. That's this week.
Yeah. It's like scoring 20 points in a game in the last quarter where you're getting smoked the whole game, and it's not quite enough to win. But it's enough to make a mark. It's enough to make history. But you had her at number two. I got Emily at number one. This is her week because there's not much positive going on. She brings the information to Clara about the parental lineage of the Trenchard brothers. And then she's the one who is keeping the Reverend on his uptick. Granted, not Nell.
Yeah.
But her verbal smackdown to her sister. It's like, you're going to ruin me. You're going to ruin Mom. You're going to... Like, you're making our entire lives miserable. Like, you... I hate you. When she said that, I was like, whew! Because I never... Emily has been a stick in the mud this whole season. And she just makes you realize that Clara is living on cloud nine, doing whatever she wants, and not in this house.
Yeah, it really is a winning moment for her. I'm so glad that you come around to seeing what I saw last week in Emily.
Yeah, I'll give you, pat yourself on the back over this WebEx call.
Yeah.
But all one right, week
well, that's
left.
This week on Belgravia. Yeah, 1 week left, the finale. This is a heck of a penultimate episode.
Oh, yeah, because... You know, I feel like sometimes, and this is a fellowsy thing, you like neat, tidy, put all your ducks in a row for the last episode to be like chaos free. It's like, no, we've got a lot of chaos. Yeah. We've got a big old looming Balassus that we've been dying to see.
I feel like if they were to keep us a little bit more interested over the weeks, they could have dispatched the LRB Nell reveal maybe a week or so earlier. We didn't need to wait until now, I feel.
Yeah, I think you could do the LRB Nell reveal, and then you have the moment where Clara walks in and they are, like you suggested, in the act.
Yeah.
And then now Nell, Clara says, like, you dog, and Nell says, wait a minute, you're talking to somebody else too? And it gets blown out of proportion, and now the LRB's a total loser.
Yeah,
but you've been trying to play this fine line with Ellerby. I don't see the function of it.
Yeah, and I don't know. There's got to be other areas though where they could have doled out something, rather than like, because this week does pack a punch. It's just such a maybe if they shorten the season just a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tighten it up.
Well, Dave, what else have you been watching, man?
Not too much. One thing I think we're going to need to dedicate a Patreon episode, but Love is Blind is as strong as it's ever been.
Oh, man, it's out of control. It's so good.
It's got the best characters.
Yeah. Truly, they are characters. They're not real people. And if these are real people, God help us. Yeah, it's great TV. But aside from that, man, there's been so much TV on. Mm-hmm. I can't keep up. It's crazy to me that two major networks are funding shows that are primarily with Japanese dialogue in Tokyo Vice and Shogun.
Uh-huh.
Been watching those. Good TV.
Yeah, I think I'm going to wait a little bit on Shogun because I just want to make sure. I have faith.
Okay.
But
it's a mini series, so it, you know.
So when it's done, it's done. There's no season. You know, like.
Yeah.
I also like it. None of my coworkers watch real serious TV, and they all watch Love Is Blind. Yeah. So like, there's more to talk about if I stay up on the bad TV, and then like take the good TV at my own pace.
I watched all the Traitors at least. I'm caught up on that. Great reality TV. Dave, you watched though a movie that may appeal to some of our listeners.
Oh yeah, that's right. Leap Year. Last week was the February 29th, Leap Day, and
yes,
I think several years ago I'd watched this movie and I didn't like it very much. But my girlfriend likes a rom com, and it was Leap Day. It takes place in Ireland. We're both, you know, very pale skinned Irish folks. And she said, I would watch that movie. And I said, I remember it being pretty painful, but I would do it again. And I did it again. And it was pretty bad, but it's not an unpleasant watch. It's just a bad movie. It's a Hallmark movie with a Hollywood budget. Okay.
Good to know.
Yeah, Matthew Good. Right. And I was watching it. And
how's Matthew Good?
He's fine. He's probably Amy Adams they have good chemistry towards the back half.
The directing is just bad. It's not funny at all.
It's not funny. It's predictable. But I didn't realize. So my girlfriend says, "Who is Matthew Good? I don't know this guy." And I was like, "Downton Abbey, The Crown, Death Comes to Pemberley."
Talbot.
The number of things that Guernsey Literary Potato Peel Society, the number of Matthew Good's projects that we have covered on this podcast and on our Patreon, it's like we are a few good men. So, but
we are a few Matthew Good men. Yeah.
So I would say if you have not seen Leap Year, it is still Leap Year, but the whole movie is about Leap Day. So.
Yeah.
You still have all the rest of the year to appropriately watch Leap Year.
That is so strange, too. Yeah, you're absolutely correct, Dave. Like, it says it's called Leap Year, but the movie's about a leap day.
It's about Leap Day, yeah.
Oh, man, that's backwards.
Yeah.
Well, glad you did the work to watch it, and we did not, Dave.
I mean, we would enjoy it. I mean, we're considering watching that Lindsay Lohan, Jimmy from Downton Abbey rom-com on Netflix that's about Irish people. So I'm sure that's not going to be significantly better or worse. Well, it might be significantly worse, but I don't think it'll be better.
Who knows?
But we'll see when we get there.
Yeah. Well, that wraps up this week for Belgravia, the next chapter in the Lord's Grantham. And can't wait to talk about that finale next week. But until then, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, X, lordsgrantham@gmail.com. You can hit us up on all those channels. Find us on Spotify and iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. Leave us a 5-star rating review if you so choose. You can find our backlog on our Podbean website. And we have our Patreon with bonus content and Lord's Grantham Lounge on Facebook. And so we will catch you next week on the pod.